From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Monday edition and yet another week of Washington Watch. I am Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony. So glad to have you on board with us. All right, we've got a lot coming your way. Let me share with you some of the highlights. As you've probably already heard by now, today marks the second anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's Dobbs decision, which overturned Roe v. Wade nearly 50 years ago, or of abortions for nearly 50 years, where millions of babies' lives had been lost. And quite frankly, I'm probably sure that most of you remember exactly where you were when you heard the announcement of the Dobbs decisions. Well, Texas Congressman Nathaniel Moran will be joining me here in just a moment to celebrate that decision. And as a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Congressman Moran will also discuss with me about Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's continued request for the Biden administration to stop dithering with the release of promised munitions to Israel. So you don't want to miss that. He'll be with me here in just a moment. And on this Dobbs anniversary day, the contrast between the two parties absolutely could not be more clear.
2 years ago on that day, I actually made a prediction that overturning Roe v. Wade would be the opening shot on a full-on assault, state by state, on reproductive freedom. And that is exactly what happened.
Of course, that was Vice President Kamala Harris. She was speaking earlier today. But frankly, what she calls an assault on freedom is really our Republican action. Her problem is that it simply is not pushing forward the agenda of the radical left that she has for our country.
The people will decide, and that's the way it should be. The people are now deciding, and some states are a little bit more conservative, and some states are much more liberal. If the radical Democrat extremes get their way, they will have a federal law for abortion to rip the baby out of the womb in the seventh, eighth, and ninth month, and even execute the baby after birth.
Of course, that was former President Donald Trump speaking over the weekend. Well, President Biden and other Democrats have literally planned more than 50 events today alone to promote the left's obsession with abortion. And a coalition of pro-abortion groups have launched a $100 million campaign pushing abortion. I'll be talking about the left's abortion push and how those who support life should respond with FRC's Meg Kilgannon a little bit later in the program. And you may not be aware, but it's National Women's Sports Week. This year's week to celebrate women's advancement in sports comes while the Biden administration's Title IX rewrite will not only kill women's sports, but it also puts girls and women in danger by yielding priority to men who are posing as women. The left says that's not happening, but more and more women are speaking out.
That's what we're up against. That's what we're dealing with, to hear constantly that this isn't really happening. You know, why are you guys creating a solution to a problem that doesn't exist? We're here to debunk that.
Well, that is former NCAA swimmer Riley Gaines speaking at an event during the Take Back Title IX Summer 2024 bus tour. Well, that bus tour will be rolling into Washington, D.C. later this week, and Paula Scanlon, a member of the tour and also a former teammate of Leah Thomas on the Penn women's swimming team, she'll be joining me to discuss why we must take back Title IX. You don't want to miss that. And of course, we knew it was coming, but the ACLU and its allies have already filed a lawsuit against the Ten Commandments legislation in Louisiana. Well, legal scholar Matt Staver, founder and president of Liberty Counsel, he believes the Louisiana legislature crafted this law specifically to pass any constitutional legal challenge. And he'll be joining me a little bit later in the program as well to discuss and explain that situation. So we have a lot coming your way. Of course, the website is tonyperkins.com. We have tons of resources available there for you. Encourage you to take advantage of it. And of course, we also know that biblical truth is massively under attack in our culture today. And you, right now, have an opportunity to help FRC defend the faith. Right now, you can take advantage of a $2.5 million challenge match so that when you give, you're giving twice as much. It has twice the impact. You only have till June 30th to help us out with this. And so if you'd like to help us defend the faith, simply text the word defend to 67742. That's defend to 67742. And right now, we also have operators standing by. I'm going to give you a telephone number. It's an easy one to remember, but operators are standing by right now if you'd like to help us out and defend the faith. The number is 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. All right, let's jump in now to our first story. As I mentioned, today we're celebrating the second anniversary of the Dobbs decision when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade after nearly 50 years of abortion and literally millions of innocent lives lost. Of course, this comes at a time when the two parties' approach to the sanctity of human life and how to protect the most vulnerable as image bearers of God. The difference between the two parties simply could not be more clear than right now. With another election season approaching, how should those who support life respond? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Nathaniel Moran. He serves on three House committees, including the Committee on Foreign Affairs and the Judiciary. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Texas. Congressman Moran, always great to have you. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Jody. It's always great to be here with you.
All right. I was, you know, just thinking about this. 2 years of the huge decision. You were actually 2 years ago, you were the Republican nominee campaigning for your first congressional term when that decision came out. Give us your reaction at the time. Do you remember it?
Well, the reaction was elation and overjoy. That's what we had been looking for since the 70s when Roe was wrongly decided. We needed a Supreme Court, and thanks to President Trump, we got a Supreme Court that looked straight to the constitutional text and determined that Roe was wrongly decided and needed to be overturned.
Absolutely. And I'm actually going to be going into this a little bit more in the next segment. But, you know, Biden's reelection campaign, their focus seems the entire focus is all about abortion. And that has made an enormous contrast, quite frankly, between the parties. And it's crystal clear where the two parties stand on this. How should Republicans use this, in your opinion, to promote a message of life?
Well, I think the real contrast here is when you talk in terms like the Democrats, here's what the Democrats say. They say they want to focus on rights, reproductive rights, regardless of morality. That's really what they want to do. But on the conservative Republican side, we want to talk about responsibility rooted in morality. That's the real difference between the positions here is we want to go in and we want to talk in terms of hope and support for women and infants and children, both before and after birth. And we want to recognize that there is a creator in this world that created us and for a specific purpose. And just look to Jeremiah 1:5. When we're talking about a Christian worldview, we know the words of Jeremiah really affirm what we believe. And that is before we were formed, God knew us. Before we were born, he actually set us apart and he appointed us to something specific in this life. So it's great to be known, to be set apart and to be appointed. And all that happened before birth. And that validates what we know. And that is life begins at conception.
Extremely well said, Congressman. And that is really what this whole argument ends up coming down to. And so you couldn't have said it any more clearly. If I can, let's switch topics because Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has gone public, as we all know, with his request for munitions that have been held up by the Biden administration, who frankly promised to help Israel defeat Hamas. What's the holdup?
The Biden administration has admitted pausing or holding up at least one, several thousand bombs and munitions that were needed for the Rafah engagement. And now there's suspicion that they're holding up others. Senator Tom Cotton just sent a letter this week to the White House saying, we want to understand exactly what you're doing, because you're supposed to notify Congress when you send weapons and munitions. And there's not been the notifications forthcoming that we would have anticipated. And as a result of that, there's suspicion that they are sitting on these weapons. They're, quote, in process, according to the White House, but they're not where they need to be. And that's in the hands of the Israelis to defend their country.
Yeah, and you really start wondering who's telling the truth here. As you mentioned, they admitted some time back that they were pausing the munitions release, and now they're coming out, Karine Jean-Pierre and company have come out saying, we don't know what the prime minister is talking about. And so they're kind of on both sides of the fence. Is this an example of the gaslighting that the left loves to talk about?
No question about that. And they always just delay the information. It takes us additional avenues and pushing and force and legislative action to actually extract the information they don't want us to have. They don't want the American public to have. But once we push, we find out the truth. And the truth is hardly ever what Karine tells us in her press conferences.
Well, it's just stunning that we're even in this situation. And I know we'll probably be talking about this more, but as the Prime Minister Netanyahu will be coming to a joint session there in Congress, That's going to be a powerful time as that unfolds in about a month from now. But again, let's move on to, there's about 100 victims, I'm sure you saw this, of the October terrorist attacks in Israel. About 100 of those individuals now are suing UNRWA, the United Nations Organization for Palestine. The lawsuit basically says that UNRWA has helped Hamas build up the terror infrastructure and the personnel that were actually necessary to carry out those October 7th attacks. The U.S. has suspended aid to UNRWA, but should this suspension, do you think, be permanent?
Absolutely. UNRWA is totally unreliable. They're not pro-American. They're not pro-Israel. They're pro-Hamas. We saw in our Foreign Affairs Committee hearings information that led us to understand that there were several involved from UNRWA directly with the attacks on October 7th. And then when you dig deeper, you find out really there's a Hamas sympathizer agenda among UNRWA totally. So we cannot trust them with any kind of money and any kind of funds. We need to extract that, which we have done this year, but we need to make it permanent.
And what is the appetite for that in Congress? Do you think that permanent defunding of UNRWA has momentum to go forward?
Oh, absolutely. I think it does, because even folks on the Democratic side of the aisle, they recognize that there is a problem here, that we have to have people that are allied with us and our national strategic interests before we start giving them money. We don't need to give people money that are going to go in and educate kids against America and against Israel. We certainly don't want to give money that's going to end up in the hands of our enemies like Hamas. We do not need to do that. We've uncovered that as a result of some of our legislative committee hearings. And as a result of that, we stopped funding them this year, and we need to make that permanent.
Thank you so much, Congressman Nathaniel Moran of Texas. Always an honor to have you on the program. We so appreciate your leadership there in Congress, both for the principles that we all cherish, but also for the kingdom principles that we also cherish and desperately need. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Jody. Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
You too. All right, friends, after the break, we're going to be taking a look at the Democrats' focus on abortion as we head into the November elections. They've already launched a $100 million campaign. What else can we expect? Well, we'll find out right after the break. Stay tuned.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony. Glad to have you joining us as well. All right, last week on the program, we discussed President Biden's parole-in-place policy, which would essentially grant mass amnesty to hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants. This policy is the latest example of the Biden administration weakening American sovereignty and citizenship ahead of the 2024 election and the 2030 census. So both of those go together. And we're inviting you to sign a new petition and to help us tell Congress to oppose this unlawful amnesty policy. This is a critical time for all of us to join together. And of course, we here, as well as you, our listeners, believe in taking action, not just listening to the news, but getting involved. So we invite you to join us by signing this petition that will go to Congress. You can simply text the word border, that's border, to 67742, or you can visit frcaction.org/border. So be sure to do either of those options and help us out. All right, on this second anniversary of the Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade, the Democrats have made it crystal clear that they are running this upcoming election on the abortion issue. The Biden administration, or excuse me, really the Biden campaign and other Democrats are staging today some 50 events throughout the country using this anniversary of the Dobbs decision to promote abortion. At the same time, there's a coalition of pro-abortion groups that recently launched a $100 million campaign to push for abortion policies that go even further than Roe v. Wade. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Meg Kilgannon. She's a senior fellow for education studies at FRC, and she served in the Department of Education during the Trump administration. Meg, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Great to see you, Jody. Thanks for having me.
Well, it is our honor. All right, listen, the Dobbs anniversary, this is a big deal. It's a day that we're all celebrating, but Democrats are having more than 50 events today to celebrate abortion. It's just stunning to me. It seems crystal clear that 2024 for the Democrats is all about abortion. That's the issue that they're running on. Is that a proper assessment?
I'm sad to say that it is, Jody, and I have to say that as a Catholic, to have a Catholic president of the United States overseeing this kind of campaign putting all of his effort into riding this issue to a victory, what he thinks will be a victory in the fall on the lives of unborn babies in the womb. It is just horribly offensive to me as a Catholic, as a woman, as a human being, as a person who loves life. This is a really, really scandalous situation for
it really
for
is.
The country.
And I actually want to play a little clip here because I'd love to get your reaction to this. So if we can pull up clip 5, let's play this. I'd like to get your reaction to this.
Today, our daughters know fewer rights than their grandmothers. This is a healthcare crisis, and we all know who was to blame. Donald Trump.
Wow. I just got to get your reaction to this, Meg.
Well, you only have rights if you're born, Jody. That's the only way
Great
you
point.
Have rights. And so, grandmothers aren't grandmothers unless they are grandbabies. And daughters aren't daughters. Daughters don't have daughters unless they give birth to those daughters. And so it just that statement, we like to on the right, we like to sort of make fun of Kamala Harris when she Vice President Harris, when she makes her gaffes. But one thing she's very good at is talking about abortion. And she speaks very eloquently about that. Again, a great tragedy that she's capable of doing so. And so we do need to take this seriously, that they are running on this issue and they are not going to stop.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, that's about the only topic that she ever discusses, it seems, anymore. But it's just stunning. She says our daughters have fewer rights than the grandmothers. There's so much that we could unpack here, but I don't know that anyone could unpack it any more clearly than what you said. We only have rights if you're born. That's a powerful statement. All right, let me add another layer to all of this. The pro-abortion coalition of groups, they've now launched a $100 million campaign this week to promote abortion. They're not shy at all about wanting to go much further than Roe v. Wade. Your reaction to all of this?
Well, it's simply clear that they really believe that this is an issue that they can run on and win on. And we are going to have to do a really good job as conservatives in stating the case for life, in making sure that these arguments fall on deaf ears, showing that our actions to support families, to support mothers and fathers and keeping their children and having those children and loving those children, we need to be very, very vigilant about that. And we need to make sure that the next president addresses problems in the economy that make it so that people don't think they can afford to have a family, put extra pressure on people to make these horrible decisions.
Great point. And there's no doubt this is the issue for the Democrats this season coming out. But equally as passionate, perhaps even more so, are those who are pro-life. Those of us who are pro-life are pro-life. I mean, in all circumstances, this is something that the Republican Party, on the other hand, must embrace wholeheartedly. And that's whether on the state level or federal level or even our platform, for that matter. Would you agree?
I absolutely agree that the Republican Party has to be the party for life. We cannot compromise on this issue because, again, you only can be a member of the Republican Party if you're born. You can only be a member of the Democratic Party if you're born. Nothing matters if we kill you in the womb and do not give you a chance to live your life. And so we do. We have to be vigilant in our defense. We have to be we have to make sure that we don't accept compromises in party platform language. There is a role at every level of government to protect life. And the Democrats demonstrate that because they weaponize government at every level to destroy life.
Absolutely. Well, Meg Kilgannon, I can't, you always do an amazing job, and we're so grateful for all that you do to keep us informed and keep us on track. And thank you so much for taking time to be with us today on Washington Watch.
Thank you, Jody.
All right, folks, that's a powerful thing. Look, it can be intimidating, but now is the time, while the Democrats are going wild on abortion, we likewise have to be strong in our stance for life. All right, after the break, National Women's Sports Week, And it's all under attack under Title IX rules. We'll talk about it in just a moment. Stay tuned.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host today, Jody Heiss, an honor to be sitting in today for Tony. All right, we've heard about the anniversary of the Dobbs decision, but there was another anniversary of note that is kind of slipping under the radar. Yesterday marked the 52-year anniversary of Title IX. That was way back when President Nixon signed the act into law in 1972. And I am confident, absolutely confident, that he at that time never could have anticipated a day when a future sitting president would use that act, Title IX, to push for biological males to compete in girls' and women's sports. He could have never imagined that act where men would today demand access to women's spaces. In response to the Biden administration's radical rewrite of Title IX rules, the Our Bodies, Our Sports organization has launched recently the Take Back Title IX Summer 2024 bus tour. It's going all across America. It features former Olympians, NCAA athletes, their high school athletes, coaches, prominent women's advocates. It's all, by the way, also, of course, coinciding with this week's National Women's Sports Week. But that tour is going to be rolling into Washington, D.C. tomorrow. And joining me now with an update is Paula Scanlon. She's a former University of Pennsylvania swimmer, where she was, in fact, a teammate of Leah Thomas. And she's now the on the Independent Women's Forum ambassador and doing an incredible job there. But Paula, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me today.
All right. Well, we're excited about this tour. Give us an update. How's it been so far?
It's been good. We visited a lot of cities, just raising awareness. We've had great turnouts and a lot of our events already happening. I mean, our bus was also vandalized in North Carolina at the end of last week. So that was definitely a little bit shocking, but not surprising because the other side is relentless, but we fight harder and stronger. So it didn't stop us. It didn't make us change our ways at all. But really, the purpose of this tour is to raise awareness to what's happening with Title IX in this country. The Biden administration has recently tried to rewrite it, where they now want sex to be equivalent to gender identity. Meaning any man who identifies as a woman can take away a woman's athletic or academic scholarship, can be housed in a female-only dorm, can use women's bathrooms and locker rooms. Just any woman should care about this issue. And this is not just colleges. This is all federally funded education institutions. So this could happen to your children in elementary school and middle school if those schools take federal funding.
Well, you just hit on a lot of it, what I wanted to ask you, but I'd like for you to go in a little bit more on a personal level why this issue is so important to you. I mean, you were right there, teammates with Leah Thomas, but how did you rise to the level of involvement that you currently are? How did this become such an issue for you?
Absolutely. I mean, when I was on the team, I experienced exactly what, I mean, I've shared it publicly now for over a year now, but the university told us that our feelings didn't matter. They said that if we objected to undressing with Leah Thomas in the locker room, that we needed psychological services. And by the way, this is not something they made us do once or twice. They made us undress in the locker room with a 6'4" tall man 18 times every single week we were on that team. And again, they continually told us if we objected to it, we were the problem, we were hateful, we were bigoted. They told us we were on the wrong side of history. They said we'd never be able to find a job. I mean, it was really just every tactic to emotionally manipulate us into being silent. And I struggled with it for a long time. I spoke anonymously. I was anonymously in the What is a Woman documentary. That black blob was me. But really my turning point was, and you'll see this athlete speaking tomorrow in D.C., her name's Peyton McNabb. She was a high school volleyball player, and she was knocked unconscious by a volleyball that was spiked by a male who identified as a girl on the opposing team, spiked the ball into her head, knocked her unconscious. She's partially paralyzed in her face, can't play sports in college now. And I saw that, and I said to myself, if I continue to stay quiet while people like Peyton are being permanently injured for life, I am part of the problem. And it was really at that point I knew I had to speak up about it because I needed people to know what I went through. And I needed other people to also speak up against having men in women's sports. Because ultimately what I experienced, yes, it was emotionally damaging, but no one was physically harmed. And now we're seeing girls being physically harmed. And that was really where my turning point was.
Wow. What a powerful, powerful story. Well, you'll be in Washington, D.C. tomorrow with the rally. What can people expect?
Yes, we're going to have a great lineup of a lot of speakers. Martina Navratilova, big name that'll be there. I will be there. Riley Gaines will be there. A lot of other athletes that are either former collegiate athletes or former Olympians. It's going to be a great lineup and I recommend everyone go. DC is also a great place to have this because again, it's the Biden administration that's really pushing for the destruction of women's sports and the destruction of safety for women. So it's very important that we do this in DC.
All right, real quickly, I couldn't agree any more with you, but where can people go, viewers and listeners, where can they go for more information about this tour? You're going all over the country. How can they follow it and join?
Yes. OurBodiesOurSports.com is where you'll get information about our event at the bullpen tomorrow night in Washington, D.C., but also a few other stops at the end of the week as well.
Thank you so much, Paula Scanlon, Independent Women's Forum Ambassador and a great hero, a warrior. Thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
All right, friends, stay tuned. After the break, I'll discuss the legal history and the precedent that supports Louisiana's recent legislation to require, that's right, to require the Ten Commandments be posted in public schools. This is a big issue, huge issue. Stay tuned. We'll get into it right after the break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation. bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. An honor today to be sitting in for Tony. And just a reminder, I mentioned it a while ago, but I'll bring it up again. You can take advantage of FRC's $2.5 million challenge match. And by so doing, you can have twice the impact when you give before June 30th. So join us to defend the faith. You can do so by texting the word defend to 67742. That's defend to 67742. We also have some operators standing by right now if you'd prefer to call. The easy phone number, it's 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. And we look forward to talking with you. All right, as we've discussed, last week, Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry signed into law legislation making his state the first in the nation to require the Ten Commandments be posted in every public school classroom. Well, the ACLU and other groups wasted no time. They've filed a lawsuit today challenging this law. But many experts believe that in anticipation of the lawsuit, the legislation's authors constructed a law, the language within this law, that's going to satisfy legal precedents. Well, joining me now to explain this is Liberty Counsel's founder and chairman, Matt Staver. Matt, welcome to the program. Always an honor to have you, my friend.
Thank you, Jody. Good to be with you in FRC.
Well, thank you so much. Look, before we just get into the details of this particular law and all that sort of stuff, just a general history. I mean, when we come to a constitutional law, our country's founders, it's well documented. They had a good understanding of the Ten Commandments being the basis for our laws and our legal system. So with that backdrop, why would someone oppose public school students, children, from gaining a better understanding, gaining a better appreciation of the foundational documents that our states and our national government really relies upon when it comes to legal matters and how we stand?
Well, you know, the ACLU and groups like Freedom From Religion Foundation, they have an agenda, and that is to wipe away anything that has a Judeo-Christian heritage or history. And certainly the Ten Commandments predate America. I wrote a booklet called The Ten Commandments in American Law and Government, going through all 10 of the commandments. And I did this based on litigation where we were defending the Ten Commandments displays all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. We, since 2005, when the Supreme Court issued some decisions on this issue, we've never lost a Ten Commandments case, whether it's a standalone case or it's a case in the context of other legal documents like the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, Magna Carta, and so forth. If you go back to the Ten Commandments, prior to even the founding of America, they have for thousands of years influenced law and government societies, and certainly had a big influence in Europe. That influence carried over here in the United States. And that's why when you go to the United States Supreme Court, the most prominent display of any symbol in this court, inside and outside, is the Ten Commandments, which appears around 50 times, both inside and outside of the U.S. Supreme Court. Amazingly, the actual official seal of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which has been infamously known to be a very activist court, that particular seal has the Ten Commandments as part of it. It is prominent all over the United States. Why? Because it is critically important and influential in American law and government. In fact, if you go back to many of our early states and our judiciary laws and many, many court decisions, they actually reference the Ten Commandments when we are referring to laws such as theft, murder, being truthful under oath, and so forth. All 10 of the Ten Commandments have been cited as bases for law, like, for example, blasphemy laws, where we talk about libel or defamation in the context of this would be referring to some of the first four of the Ten Commandments. Very influential. What we have seen, however, is back in the 1970s, an activist Supreme Court. Today, we celebrate the overturning of Roe versus Wade from 1973. Well, 2 years ago this month, and in the term of the Supreme Court 2 years ago, a court also overturned a 1971 decision, Lemon versus Kurtzman, from that liberal 70s. And it was that decision that caused all kinds of chaos and havoc. But even under that decision of Lemon versus Kurtzman, which distorted the First Amendment free exercise, establishment clause, and free speech clauses, even under that, we won time after time after time Ten Commandment cases. Now, with Lemon being overturned as of 2 years ago, the Supreme Court says we need to go back to a historical approach to the establishment clause. And when you do that with the Ten Commandments, that's exactly why Louisiana took this opportunity to pass this law. They are on very good legal standing.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was hoping we would lead into, because you know this as good as anyone, both the history and the legal standing, the legal foundation that this Louisiana law is standing on. So you feel good with the language that they put into this. As I understand, they're referencing some U.S. Supreme Court rulings, as you just mentioned, some of those in the language that they have. Why is this going to be so important, this case?
Well, I think it's very important because it's one of the first cases post the overturning of Lemon versus Kurtzman in 2022. That actually addresses a religious symbol. Now, we've had other cases involving free speech. Our case that was part of overturning Lemon was the Shirtlift versus City of Boston, where they used Lemon to censor private Christian viewpoints. The other case was the Coach Kennedy case. Those two combined together, they used Lemon to censor private viewpoints. But Lemon is gone. It's over. It can no longer be cited. 7,000 times was it cited or referenced in law review articles, and now it's history. Now we go back to a historical approach. And what the Tennessee legislature did is they actually cited cases such as the Van Orden case that came out of Texas with the standalone monument that upheld that standalone monument. But even greater than that is this new sea change. So I think it's very important, Jody, because this is one of the first of many states and also displays and other issues that are flowing out of this sea change of 2022. We certainly remember that Roe was overturned 2 years ago today. But also, this was a huge change in 51 years of bad Supreme Court precedent, and now we're focused on a historical approach to the First Amendment. That is huge, not only for the Ten Commandments in public schools or the Ten Commandments in public places, but nativity scenes, other kinds of expression of religious, particularly Christian viewpoints, whether they're Bible clubs or churches, so many different changes. We have more freedom now than we had clearly 2 years ago. And we need to exercise that freedom. And that's what we're seeing in this law. I think we will see many states follow the lead of this particular development.
Yeah, I was, in fact, talking with one of your colleagues about a month or so ago about this very thing. And this is one of those things, Matt, that seems to be kind of going under the radar. It is a huge decision, but it has not been made very public. You know, we hear a lot about the Lemon Test. I got several things I want to ask here. A lot of talk about the Lemon Test. If we can just first explain what is meant by that phrase, the Lemon Test, but also just how huge this whole reversal of Lemon is. You've just gotten into it, but this is just the, as you just alluded to, from nativity scenes to a host of things, this is a huge decision. Well, let's begin. What's meant by the Lemon Test?
Yeah, it comes from a 1971 case called Lemon versus Kurtzman. And in that case, the Supreme Court developed three tests to determine whether something violates the First Amendment Establishment Clause. And in doing so, they distorted and twisted the First Amendment. So this is the beginning of the 70s activism. You have 71 on Lemon, you have 73 on abortion, you have 77 with regards to protection for people of faith in the workplace, and they gutted that. That was overturned 1 year ago. And then you had 78, the affirmative action admissions to colleges and universities, all from the 70s activist court because they didn't like faith, they didn't like Christianity, they were pro-death, and they had a very liberal activist bent. So Lemon versus Kurtzman was a case that was used, and that's where we get the word Lemon Test, three-part test. And that test was used to allow a lot of subjectivity. For an example, a nativity scene could be constitutional if it was set up by the government, like the city wanted to have their own nativity display, but it depended upon how many other secular symbols of the holiday were in that display. And it also depended upon how close they were. Was Santa Claus close enough to the nativity? You know, was a Christmas tree secular or was it sacred? You know, was it close in proximity to the nativity scene? And sometimes you'd have to get out your measuring stick to decide whether or not this is constitutional or not. It was really nonsensical. So it allowed a lot of judges just to wield autocratic authority based upon their own ideology to strike down a religious display or to uphold it. And basically everything. I mean, I remember a situation where the Ten Commandments was literally etched on the courthouse wall in Philadelphia. And during a lower court decision, which struck it down, they covered it while it was up on appeal. And thank God on appeal, the Court of Appeals reversed it. But they were going to literally chisel, if the Court of Appeals went the wrong way, chisel that off the outside of this courthouse that had been there for decades and decades. So that's the kind of nonsense that we faced. Now, thank goodness, we're looking at the First Amendment from its historical meaning and purpose. And when you look at that in the context, I mean, the Ten Commandments, more than any other document through thousands of years, but certainly in America, have more than any other document influenced our American law and government. We don't have our laws that we have now, absent the Ten Commandments. They clearly grew out of the Ten Commandments and were shaped by the Ten Commandments. So no wonder why it would be an appropriate display in schools as well as in public places. And that's why we've seen it in so many different locations. But, you know, they want to keep all, they would rather keep the Ten Commandments about not murdering, not stealing, honor God honor your parents. They'd rather keep that from their view while they indoctrinate them and make, you know, people protesters and, you know, anti-American. I think this is a great move by Louisiana, and I think it'll be upheld. Certainly, we will file an amicus brief in support. We have lots and lots and lots of research. It frankly is amazing, this area of research. I was amazed when we delved into it back in the early 2000s as to how much the Ten Commandments literally have shaped our American law and government. We would not be the same country without the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, in fact, it was during the early 2000s, while I was a pastor, that it was this Ten Commandment issue that helped the Lord use to transition me from the pulpit into more political involvement to the extent of going to Congress. But you mentioned the moral issue here. There's a lot of people, I'm sure the ACLU will, part of their argument will be, you can't be cramming your morality down the minds of these children, these students. But this is more than that. In the first place, they are cramming their immorality down the minds of our children with their transgender and their LGBT and all this kind of stuff. It is their religion, really, that they are cramming immorality down the throats of our children and our culture, for that matter. But you bring up the whole historical role of the Ten Commandments and how they have played such an enormous role in the founding of our country and our legal system. All of this is a huge distinction in this argument that's going to unfold as this moves forward.
Yeah, really it is. I mean, it is really surprising when you go into the United States Supreme Court, the fifth symbol around the great room when you walk in up the big steps to go into the Supreme Court, every fifth symbol is the profile of Moses with the Ten Commandments. When you walk in the double doors, the Ten Commandments are etched on both double doors. A lot of times you don't see it because the doors are open when you walk in. When you sit in the pew and you exit, the Ten Commandments is at eye level on each pew, both to the right and to the left. The Ten Commandments is the only document that actually is written inside the Supreme Court. And on the outside of the Supreme Court, Moses occupies, on the backside of the Supreme Court, the very central seat holding the Ten Commandments with all the other lawgivers looking up to him. And that is because, well, you know, the Supreme Court was created, that building was in the 1930s. But when you go through our country, you go like to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is 100 plus years old, that seal. And that's why it's there. It's a court of law. And the shorthand of that is the Ten Commandments. In fact, if you go on, say, a Google search for different kinds of research and you type in Ten Commandments of and have like an ellipsis, it'll pull up tens of thousands of documents that will say something like the Ten Commandments of gardening, Ten Commandments of building a better house, the Ten Commandments of fixing your roof. Why is that? Because the Ten Commandments have been a shorthand for a rule of law. So we use it in practical sense, but we've used it in a government sense and in a legal sense. It literally has shaped everything about our legal and governmental system in the United States, and not just in the United States, throughout Europe and throughout decades. I should say millennia of human history.
Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel, I can't thank you enough. Liberty Counsel has done so much on this issue and so many, many other issues as well. We all just say thank you for your leadership and the incredible work of Liberty Counsel as well. Thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. It's always an honor.
Thank you. It's a pleasure and always an honor to be with you as well.
All right, friends, that wraps up this Monday edition of Washington Watch. It's an honor to bring you this information from a biblical perspective. We've got a powerful week coming ahead, so you want to join us each day. Have a great evening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.